clearance of the 70 amas after the city is over. City, where does the city begin? Where is it over? So city is defined by the Mishnayos as you have to have a minimum population of 100 people. That's a Gemara Sanhedrin, which you have. Then you have to have a minimum of 3 chatzeres with 2 batim opening up into each chatzer. A chatzer is an area that's surrounded with walls, mukav mechitza. So if you have 3 chatzeres that are either contiguous with each other, touching each other, or 3 chatzeres within 70 amas to each other, and you have a population who lives there, not a motel where they keep on switching every night, hotel, different people. You have people live there kavua. That's the question, how kavua? Half a year, 30 days, a whole year, there are different opinions. So that's how you begin to declare that you have a city, an ear. And then the city continues every time you have another house within 70 amas of the first house. That's a continuation of the city, till the houses are no longer so close to each other. So it's a lot of times hard to tell. Some say that in North America, the houses keep on going. So you never say Tfilas HaDerech. You always, everything is a Hemshech. You never really left the Yibur HaShalir. But over here, we'll see. We'll reach a highway where there's a lot of trees and a lot of grass and buckwheat growing or whatever. And we won't see any houses. Then we'll say the Tfilas HaDerech.
Yes, it's from Aaron, and I learned it from the
Yeah, we definitely had to be on this trend, right?
I'll say the Tfilas HaDerech now. I don't know if Sitnaini Lachain the Lachesed Ula Rachanim, Beinecho Vieni Choro Ai, Visishma Koltak Lunainu, Kael Shamea Tvilo Visaknun Otto, Bolchato Arinoi, Shamea Tvilo. When we hear of the tragedy, the Mishnah says that we are expected to recite a bracha, Baruch Dainu Emes, that's considered Tzidut HaDin. We have no complaints against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though it appears to us to have been a terrible tragedy. We say that God is an honest judge. Whatever he does is correct. The Mishnah says, Kishem Shemabarchem Ala Taiva, just like one recites a proper bracha when you hear of some wonderful news, sometimes if it's wonderful news for one person, so he says Shachianu. If it's wonderful news for more than one person, sharing together the wonderful news, and you say Hatoiv Aveitiv. Just like Kishem Shemavachim Ala Teva, just like the Chachamim requires that we should recite a bracha when we hear some wonderful news, kachma barcham ala ruah, so too, we recite the bracha daiva emes when we hear about a tragedy. So the Gemara wonders why the Mishnah uses that word kishem, just like. It's not that, would you say just like you say a bracha on potatoes, so too you say a bracha on coffee? Potatoes is barpe adoma, coffee is shahakol, it's a different bracha. So why is it kishem? Just like one recites a bracha when you hear wonderful news, then you say a bracha when you hear terrible news. So the Gemara says, Kishem carries with it the connotation that one has to recite the bracha b'simcha. When you hear of a tragedy, an awful tragedy that millions of people were killed and tortured to death and so on, you have to say, Dain ha'emes tzidut hadin, And you have to say it, b'simcha. Why b'simcha? What kind of b'simcha? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rabbeinu Yoina in his commentary on Brachas that we believe, my David Rachmana, the Tadov. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Talmid Rabbeinu Yoina on that Gemara that we believe, call my David Rachmana le Tavovit. Whatever the Baruch Shalom HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a teiva, make it, whatever he does is always le teiva. We don't say a bracha shehechyonu, we don't say a bracha teiva meitiv when we hear of a tragedy. The text of the bracha has to correspond to our perception. Our perception is that it was an awful tragedy. The moment you heard about it, you had to say dayin ho'emes. Tzidikatin. But you're supposed to say the bracha, the simcha. There is a certain individual who considers himself an Orthodox rabbi who published an essay where he says that Jews today are no longer obligated to observe any mitzvahs because we made a bris, a covenant, an agreement with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to keep his mitzvahs and he's going to take care of us. So calls man that God lives up to his half of the deal, we're obligated to observe our half of the deal. Since the Rabbeinu Shalom let us down by the Shoah, so no one is obligated to do any mitzvahs. This is the words of a person who considers himself an Orthodox rabbi. When the Rabbinical Council of America wanted to expel him from membership, so he said he's going to sue them. Okay, so he's a very Orthodox rabbi. Yitz Greenberg. He published the essay, Yitz Greenberg. There's a famous story when the Slabodki Yeshiva heard that the government may draft their Talmidim into the army. So they realized they better run away. So half of the yeshiva moved to Eretz Yisrael. Half of the yeshiva stayed behind. So that was the yeshiva in Chevron. Chevron yeshiva was from Slabodka. So when they first came there, one of the sons of one of the Rosh Yeshiva, it was the Musa yeshiva, the Slabodka yeshiva was the Musa yeshiva. So one of their sons was about 20, 21 years old, very promising, and he died suddenly. And it was a terrible tragedy because he was very promising. They thought he was going to become a big Talmud Chacham. And they established when the funeral is going to take place the next day. They had to notify everyone. So the next day, the father came to the funeral an hour late. The father was a big Musanik. And everybody was embarrassed. They asked, how can he come an hour late? The Bali Musa was so makbid about Zmanim. To come late, to keep everybody else waiting an hour is unbelievable. So in the middle of Shiva, towards the end of the Shiva, someone had the chutzpah to ask him, how come he came so late? And he said, over this din in the Gemara, that we are obligated to recite the bracha when a tragedy occurs. We say, Baruch Dayinu Emes. We say, Tzidukah Din. But you have to say the simcha with the amuna. The perception is that it's a tragedy, but we're supposed to have emunah that it's really Kol Ma David Rachmana L'Tavovit, that it's something wonderful. And he says it took him an hour. He was going to have to say the bracha, Baruch Dayinu Emes, by the funerals. And he said it took him an hour till he kept on repeating in his mind that this is really the Toiva. He was crying and crying till he was able to say the bracha with some bit of simcha in his heart. That the death of his young, promising son is really the type. That's always the klal. We're supposed to recite the text of the bracha has to correspond to our perception. And we're supposed to have emunah that it's really the type. So that's what we said, Aleinu l'shabeach, we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are the Am HaNivchar. And very often, it's recorded, very often when the Nazis were torturing the Jews, they would ask him, do you still believe that you are the chosen nation? So all over Europe, many of them said, yes, if we would be in charge, we would never treat anybody else the way you're treating us. We are the chosen nation. So we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shalom HaSadik HaKoyehu HaRatzos, V'Losamana Kimishpachai Slatama, that Yisrael Adi Amani. We praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He is the Dayan HaEmes. There's a set of books by Esther Farbstein, very fascinating. Her husband is Rav Moshe Mordechai Farbstein, the son of the famous Rabbi Avram Farbstein. Rabbi Avram Farbstein was one of the main Rosh Yeshiva in Chevron Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. He just passed away maybe 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I don't know. And his son is very, very learned, very strong and learned. And his wife, Esther Farbstein, is a daughter of survivors, Hungarian survivors from the Holocaust. So she put out, I think, two books in Hebrew where she collected all. She's very learned. She must have discussed the things with her husband also. She wrote up all of the issues, all the halachic issues that came up during the war years. So one of the things that she wrote about was whether the Jews were permitted to eat the non-kosher food in the concentration camps. The din is that if it's needed to save your life, you're permitted to violate any of the averis except for the gimel averis achamuris, averis zara, gil harayis hashvichas damim. But the Gemara says if the intention of the nochri anos is lahaviro aladas, if they want to force me to eat treifa food to cause me to violate my religion, so then we say yoharig val yab, and then you have to give up your life. So there was a machlokes, she documents this, there was a machlokes during the Hakala Holocaust, whether the intention of the Nazis was to cause the Jews to violate their religion, or no, it was just they wanted to kill all the minorities. It had nothing to do with any religion. They were killing Nochrim also. So she documents this machlokes, and then she quotes that after the war was over, after everything was over, they found in the records in Berlin, the records of the Reichstag, of the German Congress, that Hitler, before he started the whole war, before he started killing the Jews, held a whole speech in the Congress there, and he said that this is a war against the God of the Jewish people. God of the Jewish people teaches them, and the Jews stand for this, their religion stands for this, to be humane and kind and decent. And he doesn't agree. He insists that power and strength is more important than decency and humanity. So she says that would appear perhaps that the other Rabbanim were right, that it was really a Miskabel Lahavra Aladas. It's not exactly Lahavra Aladas. He wanted to do away with the Jewish religion. It wasn't that he wanted to cause us to violate our religion. Okay, but there was some element of Havara Aladas involved in, you know, and all the atrocities. I remember many years ago, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld had a lot of, in his young Israel in Queens, he had a lot of survivors from the war, so he always used to have something on Yom HaShoah. He always invited every year a different rabbi to speak, so he once invited me to speak. So I didn't know what am I supposed to say. So I mentioned that Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes from the Tanoim, commenting on the pasuk after the Chet HaEgel. So it says in that pasuk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Yom Pakti Upakarti, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't punish the Jewish people fully right after the sin of the Egel HaZohar. He said, throughout history, when he will punish the Jews, it'll be a continuation, it'll be a hemshech, it'll all be a punishment for the Chet HaEgel. So I said, we don't have to try to figure out what terrible sins that the Jews violate in Europe that they deserve such a punishment. Who says that it's a punishment for what they did? Maybe it's a carryover, the punishment from the Chet HaEgel. So after I finished speaking, so one of the people, a survivor from the war, came over to me, Mr. Moshe David Kuperman. So he loved me very much, but he was so hurt by this. So he said in an angry tone of voice, Rabbi Schechter, you have no right to say that. Even if we all worshipped the Egel HaZohar, we didn't deserve what we got. We don't understand the whole Shoah. But Derech HaTeva, it doesn't make sense that everybody should go along, all the officers and all, everyone should go along. the thing was clearly Maile Ben Ateba. It was clearly Min HaShemayim. What the Rebbe Shlom's Kavana was, we can't understand, but we say Tzidik HaDin. At the Kel Amun Avein Ovel, Tzadik B'Yosharu. Rebbe Shlom knows what he's doing, and this was L'Taiva. We don't understand how it could possibly be L'Taiva, but that's, we're supposed to have such Amun, that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is L'Taiva. Yes.
We girls want to ask you, what is the difference between the like different waves of learning in the different yeshivas, in the Slobodka and in the Brisk?
Very different.
Okay, I ask a question.
Tell
everybody because they are not listening. I did not hear.
It's very difficult to describe exactly.
I asked a question about the different ways Derech of learning.
Derech HaLimud. It's very difficult to describe in abstract what is the difference between Brisk and Tells and Slabatke. It's very difficult. What you have to do is you have to take a Mishnah and a Gemara and show how Brisk would approach it, and how Tells would approach it, and how Slobodka would approach it. Each one has a totally different approach. I remember one year in the yeshiva, they wanted to have a Yom Iyun, so they asked three rabbis on the faculty. One was Rabbi Parnas, he should live and be well. One was Rabbi Nissen Alpert, Zachar Levracha, and I was the third one. So each one of us had a very different Derech HaLimud. So the yeshiva was learning Brachas that year. So they said we should explain how we would approach the opening Mishnah and Brachas. Each one had a totally different approach. What questions are you coming to answer? What are you interested in? What problems do you see? And how are you going to solve your problems? Where are you going to look for the answers to solve your problems? Each one had a totally different approach. It's very hard to describe in abstract. See, I learned by Rabbi Soloveitchik for 10 years. I absorbed a lot. So you listen to shiurim on different gemaras, 10, 15 different gemaras over the years. A lot of times he learned two different mesichtas in 1 year. He used to come in from Boston. He used to give a shiur for 2 hours to the smicha students. And he gave a shiur for 2 hours for the college students. So some of the students attended both shiur, both of the shiur. So in the course of 10 years, he covered quite a few mesichtas. So if you listen to a lot of shiurim, so you see a pattern, and you pick up a style of what questions you're interested, what bothers you. A lot of times a student would ask a kasha in the middle of the shiur, and what Rabbi Soloveitchik said, so he would say, this kasha doesn't bother me. Doesn't mean it doesn't bother him, it was a good kasha. It doesn't bother me now, I'll worry about it some other time. That's not so crucial. You have to know what questions are you supposed to pose when you approach a gemara. Each style has different questions, very hard to describe. There is a concept of Hester Panim that the Midrashim talk about. The Gemara in the first Perek in Chagiga tells a debate that took place in pantomime between an Apikoiris, a Min. We usually assume Min means a Rosh Heteris Mekak Yeshua Notzri from the original Christians. A Min means an Apikoiris in general, but a lot of times it means from the early Christians. Gemara says there was once a debate that was held in pantomime in front of the governor of the region between one of the Amoraim and one of the early Christians. So the early Christian, and it was in the presence of the governor, because there was the debate which is the true religion. So the Christian turned his back to the rabbi and he walked away, and he made a sign as if he's pushing goodbye. And then the rabbi raised his hand in response, and he went like this, as if he's going to hit someone. So the governor didn't understand what the Christian meant, and he didn't understand what the rabbi meant. So first he asked the Christian, what did you mean? So he said, God walked away from the Jewish people. They lost their status as the Aman Yivcha. So what are they hacking? They're no more. They lost their status. That's what they believe. And the Jews rejected Osa Huish, so they felt that we lost our status as the Aman Yivcha. And they claim that they are the Aman Yivcha. That was the position of the Catholic Church for over 100 years. They said, they always said like that. That was their position from the beginning of the Zionist movement, that the Jewish people will never regain Eretz Yisrael. Eretz is the Eretz HaNevcheres for the Aman Yivchar, and the Jews lost their status as Aman Yivchar. The Aman Yivchar, the Christians, because we rejected Osa Huish and they accepted him. So that's what the Apikur is. He turned around, he turned his back to the rabbi, walked away, made a simon, goodbye, you're no longer the Aman Yivchar. Then the governor walked over to the rabbi and he asks him, what did he mean and what did you mean? He didn't understand the whole pantomime. So he says, the Christian meant to say that we lost our status as the Aman Yivchar, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam walked away from us. And what did you mean when you raised me hand? He said, no, the Navi says, Od Yod Netuya. The fact that the Jewish people are singled out historically with so much torture and so much suffering is a symbol we're still the Aman Yivchar. Hester Panim does mean that God is not looking after us, he's not watching us. Hester Panim means we can't see his Panim. He is, as the Pasuk reads in Shir Hashim, he is Meitzis Min HaHarakim. Mashgiach Min HaChalonis Meitzis Min HaHarakim. If somebody peeks through a crack in the wall, or someone looks through the keyhole, the person can see everything that's happening inside the room, but the people in the room don't realize that anybody is watching. So that's what it means, Hester Panim. The Panim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hidden, that we can't see him. We get the impression as if there's nobody looking after us, but that's not true. Kodesh Baruch Hu is Meitzis Ben HaHarak, Mashgiach Ben HaChalonis, Meitzis Ben HaHarak. We don't understand it, but we're supposed to have emuna that called my David Rachmana, the Tav of it. Really quite a degree of arrogance for anyone to take a position. See, the teachers have to grade the students. So some students get an A and some students get an F. So the professor is the expert in his field, supposedly. They give some of the students an F. They don't know the material. So it's quite an act of arrogance that a human being should grade HaKadosh Baruch Hu and give him an F, that he's not taking care of Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, since he's not taking care of us, he didn't live up to his half of the deal, so we're not obligated to live up to our half of the deal. We don't grade our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Regina told us that Warsaw was the city with the largest population in Poland, and second largest population was Białystok. So before the war, the population had already, before the Second World War, the population had already reached Shishin Repo in Warsaw alone. There was an Arab in Warsaw. Before the war, there was an Arab in every city, in Galicia, in Poland, even in Lithuania. Most of the cities had an Arab. The Rabbanim in Lithuania were not so keen about the Eruvin because the Mishkanas Yankiv, Avyankal Karlina, who was the rabbi in Karlin, who had learned by Rab Chaim Volozhiner, he had a correspondence with the Beis HaTrayim, Rabbi Parmesan Margolius, who was a rabbi who was a balabos and brought. Beis HaTrayim was a businessman the city brought. He was a successful businessman. He was not the rabbi brought, but he is more famous than the rabbi for his tshuvas and for he wrote so many different svarim. They say that a poor man once came to Rabbi Parmesan Margolius and asked him for a donation, and he gave him very little money. So he asked the poor man, what do you say to my svarim? So Rabbi Parmesan Margolius wrote quite a few svarim. So he says, all of your svarim are very good, except for the Yad Ephraim, it's very shvach. Yad Ephraim is a commentary on Or HaChaim, on the Magen Avraham. So he meant that he doesn't give enough charity. He was a little stingy. Anyway, but Ephraim Zal Margolius had a correspondence with the Mishkanas Yankov. So Ephraim Zal Margolius was defending the practice of making a rule in all the cities because of the lack of Shishim Ribo. The issue is, the Gemara says, you're only allowed to carry in a Rishusayach. Rishusayach is defined a location that has walls around it. So what kind of walls? If you make an Erev and the traffic goes through, So it doesn't also rabbin mevlata mechitzta. If it doesn't prevent the heavy traffic that people walk through, if you were to make an error there, prevent the traffic from going through, the government wouldn't let you do it. It's a heavy error by definition. It's not the chassidish city. It's not square town. Every error that you make in a Goyish city cannot prevent the flow of traffic. If it doesn't prevent the flow of traffic, how can it possibly be good? So the Tosfos says on that Gemara that the only time there's a problem if the Erev doesn't prevent the flow of traffic is if you have an issue, if the Shiloh carrying is an issue deraisa. But if the prohibition against carrying is only by the Rabbanon to begin with, so then you don't have to worry about Oser Rabim and Vat Mechitz. So the Rishonim say that that's what all Eruvin in Europe were based on. They assumed that in all of the cities the prohibition against carrying was only the Rabbanon. Why was it only the Rabbanon? So everyone gave a different explanation. So many years the assumption was, like Taisu says in a few places, that if you have Rashi, and Taisu says that if you're lacking Mashish and Reba, all the laws of Haitzor are learned out from the Midbar. All the laws of Malach HaShabbos are learned out from the Mishkan. Any activity that was crucial in the construction of the Mishkan constitutes an Av Malach, and anything that was sufficiently similar to that is considered a Toldah. So the traveling in the Midbar when they had to carry the Oroin with the Kalim, with the Mishkan and everything, so you learn out all the laws of Haitzor from the carrying of the Mishkan in the Midbar. Because the traveling in the Midbar was a Hirashah, how you have to travel. A Hirashah of what? A Hirashah of how you're supposed to travel. With these three Shvatim going first, the next three Shvatim going next, and so on. What was a Hirashah? So the Gemara assumes it was a Hirashah of building the Mishkan. Traveling in the Midbar meant you're going to erect the Mishkan in a new location. But just like the other 38 malachas are derived from Asiyas HaMishkan, construction of the Mishkan, so this also, the traveling and the carrying of the Mishkan was also Asiyas HaMishkan. So in the Midbar, when they were traveling, there were Shishim Reba, people were changed, or the Jewish people were traveling. So the highways that they used in the Midbar were heavily trafficked. There were Shishim Reba, people traveling on them. That's what the Rishonim came up. There was such a girus in the Gemara. We don't have it in our Gemaras. The Goyim has such a girus in the Gemara. Rashi and Tosfos all like this. And that was assumed to be as if that's how the Taz writes on Shulchan Aruch, as if a Paschal had come out from heaven and said it was so assumed, it was so accepted. If you don't have Shishim Reba people, traffic, if you have a tiny little village, you don't have Shishim Reba population. So if you don't have Shishim Reba, so then the worst it could be is an Issa Hoitzor Derabba. So the Shaila was. But originally when they made the Erev in Warsaw, I think there was not yet Shishim Reba population in the city. The Erev was made during the lifetime of the Chiddush Arim, the first Gerer Rebbe. But by the time it came to the Second World War, there was more than Shishim Reba population. So that was the Shaila. How come? And everybody was still carrying, all the Rabbanim was still carrying in the Warsaw era. So one of the Dayanim from Warsaw, who I think he survived the war, Shlomo David Kahana, I think he moved to Eretz Yisrael after the war, if I'm not mistaken. So he wrote a letter. He said he doesn't think that the Erev in Warsaw in the first place was relying on the lack of Shishim people. He thinks it was based on a different thing. What he writes in the letter is a little counterintuitive, but this is what he says. He says, the larger the city is, the more unlikely it'll be that it'll be a Rishus Aram Deraisa. Why? It should be Fakert. If you have a bigger population, you have Shishim Reba, then it's a Rishus Aram Deraisa. Then an Arab doesn't help, because the Arab, the way we make it, doesn't block the flow of traffic. So he says, no, there's another cloud based on a Mishnah in Arab, that's explicit in a Mishnah. It's only considered a din rishus aram deraisa if the streets go cut through the whole city. Foolish mishar lishar belishol mikam. The streets cut through the whole city without turning and twisting. If you have a street that cuts through the city, but it's at a right angle, it comes in from the east and then it turns north or it turns south or something. It doesn't go straight, or it ends up in a dead end in the middle of the city. So that was traditionally, that was always assumed that that's not going to be a rishus aram deraisa. Moshe Feinstein came up with a new definition of what it means. He says himself that what he's writing is against the Shulchan Aruch. Moshe had very unusual opinions about the Eruvin, which are now they're generally not accepted. In all the cities of the world, when they make an error, everybody relies on the Chazon Ish, who learned everything very, very differently from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And the Chazon Ish was known for his expertise in Eruvin. That's why most people rely on his opinions. So, traditionally, it was always understood that the streets of the Bima Foolish, Foolish means has to cut through the whole city, and has to go approximately straight. So usually you make a little city, then on the outskirts of the city you make a cemetery, or you make a pedestal with a man on a horse, the emperor, the king who converted their country and made them into a Christian country or something. You have these kind of pedestals standing all over the place. So as the city keeps on expanding, so it's going to turn out that this pedestal is blocking the way of the traffic. So the traffic, the street has to go around it. Or you originally had a little city and you set up a cemetery on the outskirts. It's a little on the outskirts. Then the city expands, gets bigger, bigger, bigger. But you have a cemetery over there. So the streets of the city have to curve around the cemetery. That's what Shlomo David Kahan said. He thinks that the larger the city is, so the more unlikely it's going to be that you're going to have any one street that's going to go straight through. That's what some Rishonim write. So that's what he said. He said that's the reason why they still carried up until the Second World War, even though at that time, by that time there was already Shishim Rima. The Mishkanes Yaakov was opposed to all the Eruvin. He assumed that, like the Taz writes in Shulchan Aruch, that all the Eruvin that were made in all the cities in Europe were based on the assumption that if you don't have Shishim Ripo, it's not a Mishusa Abneraisa. Once you have Shishim Ripo, so it's no good. And the Mishkan Yaakov wasn't happy with that, relying on that. He said, so half of the Rishainim don't accept the Shishim Ripo story. So how come we're all makel about that? So let's say in Radin, there was an Erev, and the Chafetz Chaim saw to it that the Erev was kept in good condition, and in Brisk there was an Erev, but the Chafetz Chaim recommended to the Talmidim they shouldn't rely on the Erev. The Erev is for the Balabatim. Or in Brisk there was also an Erev. Abraham Soloveitchik recommended that the Bnei Torah shouldn't rely on the Erev, because the whole Erev was questionable. It was relying on the lack of the Shishim Ripo. And the Mishkanes Yaakov was a Talmud about Chaim Alojin, and he's the one who wrote the whole tshuva that he's not happy about all the Eruv. So Beis Ephraim was the businessman who was very world famous for his tshuvas. The Beis Ephraim's tshuvas, he was the one who defended all the Eruv, and the Mishkanes Yaakov held that you shouldn't make Eruv. So the Maaseh, they made Eruv and all over, just the Bnei Torah sometimes would be machmer not to be long on the Eruv. One of the Gedolim who wrote a Tshuva Sefer during the lifetime of the Chidush Arim, the first Gerev, when they first made the Erev in Warsaw, writes that there was an issue. We usually assume that if you have three walls around an area, let's say U-shape, so the area enclosed is a Rishus HaYochid, Min HaTorah, even though you don't have any wall on the fourth side. The whole need for the Tikkun, the Ruach Revi is the whole need for a wall or something. So Rosh HaPesach on the fourth side is only Midi Rabbanan. So the Magen Avraham quotes a tshuva from the Maharit. He quotes it in one line. It's, if you don't look in the tshuva, if you don't have a tshuva Maharit, you don't look it up, you probably won't even understand what the Magen Avraham is quoting. So he quotes a tshuva of the Maharit. When they made the Erev in Constantinople, they weren't, the Nochrim didn't allow them to put anything on the fourth side. So the Maharit was Mekel. He said, you can carry the way it is, even though you don't have any tikkun on the Ruach HaVias, because the only time you need to put Midirabonim, the only time you have to put something on the fourth side is if you're afraid someone's going to be carrying in the Erev, and they're going to walk out and continue to carry on the fourth side out of the Erev. They won't realize that they can't carry further. But if on the fourth side there is no dry land, inside the Erev there's dry land and you're walking and carrying there. When it comes to the fourth side, there's water over there. The fourth side borders on a river or a lake or something like that. So then what do you mean? You're afraid people are going to forget and carry from inside the Erev out of the Erev, but they're wearing shoes and socks and trousers. They're not going to walk into the water. So this was the kula of the Maharit. So originally when they made the Erev in Warsaw, they weren't able, the government didn't allow them to make any tikkun on the Ruach HaRevius. So the Chiddush Arim said that it's Kedai, it's a Shas of Chak, so he allowed them to carry based on this Mogen Avraham, Mishem Maharit. That there's no tikkun on the Ruach Revis, but the Ruach Revis is water, so there's no chashash that anyone is going to carry out. The Mishnah Berurah, it's interesting, doesn't say one way or the other on this issue. He probably didn't have a Maharit, and if you just read the one line in the Mogen Avraham, you don't understand what the Maharit is talking about at all. You have to look it up in the original. He probably didn't have access to a Chulas Maharit. He doesn't say one way or the other. They write that Rav Kook, when he originally came to Eretz Yisrael, he came as the rabbi in Yafo to take over the position from the previous rabbi, the one who did the Etta Mechira for the Balabatan, the one who put out the Siddur HaKra, Rav Tali Hirtz. So when he made the Erev originally in Yafo, so he made an Erev within an Erev, and he put up a sign with a map, and he wrote the inside Erev is more acceptable, the Choladeus. And the larger Erev relies on the Kula of the Maharit. So he recommended whoever can avoid it shouldn't carry on the larger area. But the smaller area, that's without relying on the Maharit. He assumed that there are those who disagree with the Maharit. And even though the Ruach Revis borders on water, you shouldn't carry. But it's known that even up until the Second World War, there were many rabbanim, big talmid chacham, tzaddikim, chassidim, misnagdim, so many religious Jews lived in Warsaw. Everybody carried in the Erev. So that was the issue. Why? By the time came the Second World War, there for sure there was a Shishim Reba population. The Shishim Reba in the Midbar were all Jewish people traveling, but the Shishim Reba that you need for a city population, the label it is a Mishus Aram Deraisa, includes the Nachram and the Yehudim. That's not only Yehudim. No, also in the Chumash, the Shishim Reba population were Yisraelim, Yehudim, male, between the age of 20 and 60. The census. Kol Yotzei Tzava B'Yisrael, those who are drafted in the army. You're not supposed to draft anybody younger than 20. And Eretz Yisrael today, they do draft people younger than 20. That's the Rashi and Chumash said that's against the din. The Rambam never quotes that din. So they said maybe the Rambam doesn't agree with Rashi. Rashi got it from the Chumash. So in the Chumash, the Shishim Reba population that's mentioned happens to be male Yisraeli between the age of 20 and 60. But the din l'dairis, that Eisus and Rashi hold, based on that girsa for the Gaonim, that if you don't have Shishim Reba, won't be Rishus Aram Deraisa, that doesn't have to be dafka males between the age of 20 and 60. Population of Shishim Reba.